They're still talking about the character qualities of Christ that we want to kind of take on to ourselves. And so I want to talk a little bit about suffering this morning, especially suffering while doing good. Because the reality is everybody in the world suffers in one way or another. Sometimes we suffer because of the things we have done, the consequences of our own actions. Sometimes we suffer simply because we are flesh and blood, and this is a world that is decaying. Sometimes, though, as Jesus pointed out, sometimes we suffer because we do the right thing and people hate it. And all of those things, everybody endures. Whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, everybody suffers. In fact, I went back, I was kind of looking at the origins of the word suffering and kind of what it meant, and found out that the one used in the Bible for the word suffering means to just experience something. In fact, it originally meant to experience something good or bad, and it's just generally by reason of use, experiencing good things, it stopped being used for that, and so it only became used for things that you experienced that were bad, that were difficult. And so we all kind of understand that. Everybody's going to go through that. And so in these passages that promise to Christians that when we suffer, God can help us and can give us the victory in spite of all that suffering, how is that any different for us than it is for everybody else who lives in the world? And so that's kind of one of the things I'd like to talk about this morning is our response to suffering. Is what God is ultimately trying to show us. That's the example that Christ set for us, that he suffered, but he didn't retaliate, which is kind of the normal human response. I mean, the Hatfields and McCoys, if people weren't retaliating for a perceived issue, we wouldn't have, you know, the story of the Hatfields and McCoys, which unfortunately is a true story of people who went, of families who actually attended the exact same church and sat on different sides of the aisle. And going back, you know, even to the story of Romeo and Juliet, right? What's the backstory of their love affair is you have two families that don't like each other. And so without the human typical response of when we have felt wronged or somebody has done something to us and we lash out, that is a very normal and a very typical human response. But it's not the response God is trying to develop in us. He's trying to help us overcome that and show us that we can respond when bad things happen to us or at us, that we can respond with good. Now, that's not typical. That's not normal. That is a learned response. But I don't know how many of you have been watching the Olympics. This morning, we had it on before we left for church. They were showing a 4x10K, you know, cross country on one of their channels. And I've watched a lot of the cross country. And one of the things that I'm amazed at is their stamina. And not even necessarily people that win. Sometimes the people that win look fresher and better than the people who are suffering further back. I mean, you know, things are coming out of their mouth. I mean, they cross the finish line and they collapse right in front and they don't move for a little while because they have given every ounce of effort they can. And for how much of that race have they been suffering? And they're suffering knowing they know what they're doing. They know what they're going to do is going to cause suffering. It's going to bring pain. I watch them and I go, no matter how great a shape they are all in, their legs and their arms are hurting so bad by the end of those races. And for a lot of us, that is exactly the analogy that Christ has given us about living in our flesh. that we are in a race. Hebrews chapter 12 talks about. We are in a struggle, a conflict, a competition to finish. And to do it in such a way that we can feel victorious. The thing is, we're not really competing with everybody else in the race. We're really just competing with ourselves whether we're going to finish the race. And so, the passage in Romans 8:29, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. So he's the eldest. Jesus is the eldest child in God's family. And he has set an example for every other child to follow. And God has said, this is your destiny. I want you, when you suffer, to not only not retaliate, I want you to do good. That's not normal. That is a learned thing to do. Just like every athlete I watch, whether it's those flying off the long, you know, the jump, you know, and flying, you know, more than a football field, and like up in the area, and so people that, you know, on snowboards that, you know, go 50 feet in the air and land, and like how people do that, how they overcome the fear, how they overcome the pain, how they overcome the challenge is difficult. In fact, I remember back in college, I had a class in physical education on diving. So I learned for about a semester how to do diving and learned a few simple dives. And even in some simple dives, you know, 1.5 somersaults or things, and they yell, straighten up to try and go through straight into the water. And occasionally you straighten out and you land totally flat on your back and on your stomach. And the coach, who actually the teacher of this particular class was the coach of the diving team at my college, and he had said, listen, everybody, he said almost everybody could dive if it wasn't for the pain. He goes, the pain separates those who can't dive. He says, only the people who can actually still do it. And so he told the story of a young girl that he had that was kind of a nationally ranked diver that diving off of the top platform, I can't remember the total meters. So, you know, 30, 40 feet in the air, he's yelling at her. You know, she's spinning, comes down, open up. She opens up, lands completely flat on her stomach. And in fact, so hard that the skin capillaries begin to bruise and to bleed through the skin and into her suit. So she walks straight up to the top and goes again with blood oozing into her suit. She opens up a little late or a little early, I can't remember which one. She lands flat on her back. Now the exact same thing's happening to her back. She's got blood coming from the capillaries of her skin. And she gets up and she goes again. And he yells to open up. She opens up and hits the dive perfectly. He goes, that's the only reason she can be a diver and you can't. Because every time she felt that pain, she could go do it again. And 99% of us can't do that. We can't suffer that type of pain and just get up and go in spite of it. But that's somewhat what God is trying to get us to go to. We don't have to get there right away. We don't have to exceed other people's level, but he's trying to get us to do more, to get beyond what is normal, to get beyond what is typical of human beings and human reactions, to be more like Christ. So let's look at some passages here. We're going to start with Philippians chapter 1. And in this book, obviously, Paul uses a number of times the idea of Christ as an example. In fact, a few weeks back, looked at chapter 2. But I want to look at this little section here. Paul is talking about how he is advancing the gospel just before this, and how even his chains and things have led to a defense of the gospel and being able to proclaim Christ. And he says, I'm going to rejoice at the beginning here, or at the very end of verse 18. He says in verse 19, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. He's talking about the pain. He's talking about the suffering he's enduring. He goes, you know what? This is going to turn out. God's going to deliver me through all this. He says, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage now, as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. For I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. Yet which I shall choose, I cannot tell. I am hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again. Now, he had been in prison at this point. And at this point, he expects to be released from prison, even though if he's not released from prison, he would be executed. Because that's really what Roman jails were for. Roman jails only held people until the judgment. And the judgment was, they didn't have prisons for people to sit in for years and years and years and kind of guard them and feed them, and they didn't do any of that. Their prisons were, you're accused of a crime, we think you've committed a crime, we're throwing you in here until the judgment's handed down. When the judgment's handed down, the judgment's either going to be, you're going to pay some big fine, not that necessarily common, you're going to get a bunch of lashes with the whip, a little bit more common, or you're going to be executed, one of the most common. And so that's all. You were in prison until they could give you your punishment. But he's thinking, I'm going to be released, and I'm going to be released for your benefit. But he was saying, if I'm not released, he's going to die. He's going to be executed. If you go back, if you go and read 2 Timothy, his letter, you can see that he is aware he is not going to be released from prison. He is going to be executed. And he knows that. He knows it's coming. He knows his time is over. And he is, he has endured that. So he goes on here, starting in verse 27, understanding all of that. He says, only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, and not frightened in anything by your opponents. He says, this is a clear sign to them of their destruction, but of your salvation, and that from God. For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake. Wow. Just how much of a blessing is that? Doesn't sound like one, does it? You're like, boy, it's been granted you. You don't just get the ice cream. You get the whipped cream and the toppings on top too. And in this case, the whipped cream and toppings on top are suffering. We don't just get to believe, we get to suffer too. Wow, that's pretty special. He says, we're engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had and now hear that I still have. Now I want to talk about this word conflict a little bit, because we're going to turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12, the exact same word is used as he uses here for conflict. And so I want to show you how he uses it over there. If you turn with me in Hebrews chapter 12, starting verse 1, we're just going to look at the first couple of verses. He says, therefore, all of chapter 11, he's been talking about all of these people that have had and lived with great faith in God in chapter 11. And so he's saying, listen, therefore, because of all these people and you're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, he actually uses the word martyr. That's the word witnesses here. That these are a bunch of martyrs. These are people who, because of their trust in God, were killed. And they became a witness, a martyr in that same sense. And he says, because we're surrounded by all of these martyrs, let us also lay aside every weight. You see that especially in the Summer Olympics and track and field. People come out and you know, who are going to compete in a competition, they come out in a warm-up suit or something. They've been warming up, and they want to stay warm, so they kind of put a suit on, you know, coat on. But when they get ready to run, get ready to race, they don't keep that on, right? They wouldn't win. Even the best, even the fastest men and women would not win their races with those on. And so they take them off. They lay aside the things that stop them. That's a really important kind of, we could kind of focus on that alone. This passage is, I've done that before in the past, that we have to sometimes lay aside things that are totally fine and normal and good, but they are stopping us and preventing us from living with Christ. And sometimes we have to lay aside things that are getting in our way of living and acting faithfully. But then he says, what we also need to lay aside is the sin which clings so closely. You know, that the sin kind of, it's like stuck to us. In our area, you ever go riding or you go running around or, you know, I remember even in our softball fields and things, back when Janae was little, some of our fields had goat heads in them. They cling. Right? They stick. They stick to everything. They hurt you. You got to get rid of them. And that's kind of what it made me think of what he's talking about here. Is sin sometimes is like that. It's like that needle that just kind of hooks onto you. Or if you were in Arizona, you could talk about the jumping cholla's. They call them a jumping cholla. They don't actually jump, but the needles have a tiny little hook on the end. So it's a cactus that has these needles, and the hook is so tiny you don't really see it. But people swear they didn't touch it, and yet they get a bunch of needles stuck in them or in their clothes, and they go, it had to jump. It didn't jump, but it hooked into you. And the sin has a way of doing that. It has a way of hooking us. And he says, we've got to, like, pull those things out. You got to pluck those goat heads out. We got to get rid of them. We got to throw them aside. We need to take that sin which clings to us. We got to set it aside. And why do we have to do these things? And he says, we've got to run with endurance the race that is set before us. I've got to run in such a way that I'm going to finish. You ever notice that if you watch the distance races or in the Winter Olympics right now, the like cross-country races and things, they talk about, they or even skating, you know, distance ones, they always talk about how fast do they want to do each lap. They don't want to just go out as fast as they can. If they go out as fast as they can, what happens at the end of the race? They can't even, they just lose speed so quickly, there's no chance. So they try to go out at a pace that they can finish still strongly. And so that's the idea. He said, we've got to run. We have got to live with Christ in a way that I can keep doing this. I can keep going on. And he says, I've got to have that endurance to be able to endure. Endure what? This goes back to the topic. Suffering, right? We don't need endurance if there's no suffering. See, if there was no lactic acid that happened in our flesh when our muscles got tired, what would we do? We would simply go as fast as we could from the very beginning and go, just keep going. But it is the pain that begins to happen, that slows us down, that causes us to go, okay, now I've got to pace myself here. Otherwise, I'd just do as much as I could, as fast as I could, but then I can't finish. And that doesn't help. The idea is to finish this race, to be faithful to the end. And so he says, I've got to look to Jesus in verse 2, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Now, he actually talks in the book of Hebrews that he opens up this way. Jesus is the one who runs the race first to set an example for everybody else to follow. And he says, and he's the one who set up the race. He's the one that ended the race. He's the one that got to the finish line and showed everybody else how to get to the finish line. And he says, we need to look to him who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. Now, I think this is a really key thing, and I'm not going to focus a lot on it. I did talk a little bit a week or two ago about hope. What allows us to endure? Hope. When we lose hope, we don't press on. That happens in life. That happens in races. That happened. People, in fact, one of the things that I've liked listening to the commentary of the long distance cross country, and they talk about these, you know, it ends up in these packs. You got like three or four out in the front who are going to, they're going to medal, and the next pack is like hoping maybe they can catch up and get a bronze or something. But they're not really. And then, because if you lose sight of the initial pack, what they say, they don't catch up. And they talk a little bit about, it's partly psychological. Why are you going to press so hard when you have no, in your mind, you have no hope of reaching the people who are going to medal? And so you just kind of give it your all, but what your all is not as much as what your all is if you thought you had a chance. Those aren't the same levels. And so we have to have that sense that we can do this. We can win this. We're right there, and we can press on. We need the hope, like he had it. He had this joy that was set before him. That allowed him to endure the cross. That allowed him to endure the shame that people heaped at him. And he looked forward to that time when he could join God again. All of that hope allowed him to press on. We need to maintain that hope and keep that hope going for us. Now, if we're really going to endure, if we're going to suffer in such a way that Christ and God is glorified in it, we're going to maintain that hope. So let's go over to 1 Peter chapter 2. And this one was already read for us, but I want to focus here a little bit more. In 1 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 19, he says, "For this is a gracious thing. When mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly." So he's talked about in this letter, the first letter Peter wrote has the word suffering in it a lot. And the reason for that is a lot of Christians were suffering. And that suffering was causing them to lose hope. And so the book is about hope. In spite of the suffering. In fact, the book is about overcoming the difficulties and trials that they all faced because they all had a view of the finish, of winning this race, of competing and completing it. And he says, this is a really gracious thing. This is a really wonderful, good thing that when somebody endures sorrow, because they're suffering unjustly. So he's talking very specifically about suffering at the hands of others when we don't deserve it. He, in fact, talks about, listen, if you suffer because you deserved it and you endure that, well, how is that any different from everybody else in the world? It isn't. What's different is when we can suffer unjustly and still do good. That's a really gracious thing. And it's the idea of to endure it means to bear up to it. Because if I suffer it, but the suffering causes me to collapse and give up, I'm not really enduring it. And God is trying to get us to be able to endure so that I can take the suffering and I can keep going. I can press on. And so he says, what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? I'm sure lots of, you know, children who've gotten spankings can testify to that. It's like, what good did that do? But he says, but if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example. He says, he called you to follow this example of his. That he suffered unjustly. He was attacked at times. And when he was attacked, he goes on, he committed no sin. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. Now, notice he says he didn't respond negatively to them, didn't do the same things back to them. But in fact, he actually went beyond just not responding negatively. You know, you ever thought that you are doing something really tremendous. When people say something bad about you or post something bad about you or say something, you know, snide and snarky about you, and you don't respond, and I'm taking the higher road, what a wonderful person I am. And that's a good first step, but that's all it is. Because he says the next step is to actually do good in return to them. That's, in some ways, I think, a more difficult step. It's a harder thing to do, isn't it? To speak well of people who have said bad things about you. So he goes on, he didn't respond in like kind with them, but he says he continued himself or entrusting himself to he who judges justly. Let me put in the next couple verses. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree that we might die to sin. So he took our sin, the sins that even that were committed against him, he took upon himself. So even when he was being reviled, a lot of the reviling happened when he was actually taking their burdens upon himself. When he was being crucified, they were insulting him. They were hurling insults at him. And what did he respond right before he died? He said, his attitude was such, he says, Lord, don't hold this sin against them. What they've done to me here today, don't hold this against them. That was his mindset. As he helped them, and they were causing him more suffering. Now, I thought it's kind of interesting that he talks about his suffering, and he didn't focus on the crucifixion and how painful the crucifixion was. Obviously, no, that was painful. His focus is on what people said to him, how people treated him. What's harder, pain? What's harder for you to take? I don't know, maybe you've been doing something and you hurt yourself, right? Maybe you're in the kitchen or something, cut your finger, right? Oh, hurts, right? Hit your thumb with a hammer. You know, hurts like crazy. Does it hurt more than when people say vile things about you? It hurts differently, doesn't it? Which one lingers? Which one kind of stays with you? And so I think it's really important that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that real pain isn't the things that happen to us physically as much as it's what people are doing to us. It's what others do to us that really causes great pain and causes pain that really lingers. And so it's a little bit like why we get traumatized if a bully, you know, hits us or something, or does something to us. But if that same exact thing happened, but it was an accident, would we have the same sense of mental trauma? No. If somebody hauls off and hits me, you're like, oh, wow, you know, now I'm afraid of them. But if somehow somebody was doing something and they swung something around and did not see me and then I got hit by it, I don't have tremendous traumas for golf clubs. But I was hit in the face by one. My friend, we were goofing around when I was a kid, doing stupid stuff with golf clubs. And I got hit and actually opened my cheek up, most of the side here, running home. Because I was standing in a place, his backswing came and hit me right in the cheek and opened up my whole cheek. I wasn't mad at him. I don't have any trauma over the event. Now, if he had attacked me and hit me with a golf club, I probably would have more trauma, mental trauma, because it wasn't just an accident I got hurt in. It was somebody physically hurt me and tried to hurt me. You see how the difference is, and what he focuses on is what other people do to us and how that is so hard for sometimes for us to overcome. And it's why it's so difficult even for when other people are trying to hurt us. How do we muster up enough strength to do good for them? Well, that doesn't come, I don't think, from us. That comes from God. He's the one that showed us, and he's the one that told us that they can't do anything to you that I can't overcome. They can't hurt you so much that I can't make it right. I can wipe away every tear, and I can take care of every pain, and I can deal with death. I have power over it. So glorify me while you live and while you breathe in this body. Now let's look at the last thing here. I just want to go up a couple of chapters here to chapter 4. So just a few verses here I want to look at to close out. First couple of verses in chapter 4. We can actually read most of the book of 1 Peter and talk about suffering and overcoming suffering, but that would be a much longer sermon. And I'm not thinking you would be nearly as happy with me. So in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 4, he says, "Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God." He says, you need to put this mind in you. It's figuring out the mind, that mindset. I think it's a little bit what the that diving coach was teaching the class so many years ago, that his student, the person he was training, that the girl who was a nationally ranked diver, her mindset was just different than everybody else's, wasn't it? That allowed her. Do you think she felt pain any differently? Probably not. She could mentally overcome pain to keep going, keep practicing, and keep doing it, and possibly feel the exact same pain again. When most of us are going, I don't want to feel that pain again because a diving medal isn't worth it. You're not getting rich diving. I mean, the only way divers ever get rich is if they become such a star that they get, and they'd have to be a great, Olympic star in such a way that they actually get commercials, because diving doesn't make you any money. And so there's a mindset there that allows people to press on when most people can't. And that's what he's telling us. We have to learn from Christ is the mindset. How do we think like he did? And a lot of that goes to, he knows where he's going. He knows what his purpose is. And he knows that I'm not there yet, and so I'm going to keep pressing on. All of these things that happen and all so many things that go on around us, we fret and worry and have anxiety over, and we realize they don't really matter that much. Because where I'm going is what really matters. So let's kind of wrap up. And with the last verse I wanted to kind of pull out here from 1 Peter 4 and 19. "Therefore, let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good." That was kind of what I started with. Entrust your soul. But when you suffer, keep doing good. That's the real challenge. That's the hard part. And I'm not telling you it's easy. I'm not telling you I'm always successful. Jesus was successful. You and I, probably not so much. But that's what we're aiming for. That's what we're shooting for. And the truth is, we can get it. Don't make Jesus and what he did so far above us that we go, well, I can never be like that, so I give up. Because when we look at Jesus on the cross and how he responded, don't we see just a handful of years later, a young guy, Stephen, responding the exact same way? How was he able to do that? Because he learned to have that mindset, the mind of Christ. And that's what we are trying to put on. That's kind of our focus this year, is being that disciple, being that one who learns him. So thank you, everybody, for your time this morning, for listening. I hope it's of some value to you and encourages you to keep pressing on the path, the struggle, the race, the competition, the conflict. When you read that passage in Philippians 1, Paul talks about the conflict, in the passage. The word he's using sounds like he's just talking about some, conflict between people. But he's using a word talking about a competition. And he's using the exact same word of the race we're all in. It's a struggle. It's a battle. It's going to be challenging. Living life with Christ is going to be a challenge. It is not what would be the easiest sport ever. I don't know what that would be. curling? It looks like maybe one of the funnest sports. But they certainly don't appear like they have to be in necessarily great shape. But he's not asked us, you know, it isn't tiddlywinks or whatever. It isn't, living as a Christian is going to be, have its ups, downs, struggles, times when it's just hard. And that mind that we have that says, I'm pressing on. Well, part of that is one another. Part of that is having other people, right? Because isolated, like a book of Ecclesiastes talks about, that a threefold cord is much stronger than a single strand. That we need other people. We need other people close to us so that we don't feel isolated and alone. And if you're here today, if you feel isolated, if you feel alone, don't let it continue. Reach out to people. You can do it to the whole congregation. You can come forward when we sing the song. Or you can just grab somebody, grab a brother or sister around you, and ask to talk. Whatever you need, though, the reason that we all are trying to walk with him and we're also trying to encourage and help one another reach that finish line as well. So if you're in need of anything and we can serve you today, please let us know how. Together we stand and sing.